You even managed to reassure your mother with your sensible, practical attitude, and that took some doing. I hugged him tightly, wishing I could tell him about the vision and the woman who had asked me for help. But I couldn't. I wished we could be back in Missouri, but that was a stupid wish that wouldn't come true. Mom returned and kissed me goodnight. I left them and took the stairs one slow step at a time, trying to sort everything out. Who was the woman who had contacted me? Was she someone who really needed my help? Or had the evil in this house twisted itself into demons who pretended to be what they were not? Nervously, I turned on the light switch in my room before I turned off the light in the hall. With trembling fingers, I closed my bedroom door and leaned against it, waiting for, no, actually willing, the voice to return. Chapter 6. The spirit chose her own moments to make contact. When I realized she wouldn't come, I was free to think about Tony, who slipped from my conscious thoughts into my dreams. I woke to slotted ribbons of sunlight streaming through the mini blinds and to a whisper, "Trate de encontrarlo." I sat up in bed, swinging my feet to the floor and brushing my hair away from my face. "Trate de encontrarlo?" I said out loud. What does that mean? Had the words come from my dream? If I'd moved, I would have missed the slight hiss of a breath taken and held. Hugging my arms to keep from shivering, I whispered, "Are you there?" No one answered. Anxious to escape whoever was with me, I rummaged through my shoulder bag to find a scrap of paper and a pen and wrote down the words so I wouldn't forget them. It didn't take long to pull on shorts and a t-shirt and race downstairs to join Mom in the kitchen, where she was still rearranging pans in the lower cabinets. She looked up at me in surprise. "You're out of breath," she said. "Hungry, I guess," I answered, and kissed the top of her head. "Help yourself to some cereal," she told me. "The bowls are now in the cupboard on the far right." As I poured milk over my cereal, I asked, "Mom, have we got a Spanish-English phrase book?" She looked up, surprised. "No. Why do you want one?" Hunching over my cereal, I mumbled, "There are some things I want to look up. I need to brush up on my Spanish." "There are a number of bookstores near here," she said. "Two on Memorial, not too far. Why don't you buy one?" "I think I will." I waited until she was through rattling pans and asked, "What can I do to help you?" "Nothing for the next few hours," Mom said. "I want to get a little better organized first, then I'll have lots for you to do." It was too early for the bookstores to be open, and I wanted to get away from the house and the voice that haunted me. "I'm going to go for a quick bike ride," I told Mom. "I'll be back in about 15 or 20 minutes." The sun was already hot, and as I wheeled my bike from the garage, I felt as though I'd stepped from a hot shower into a room filled with steam. Moisture clung to my skin, and the hair at the back of my neck curled into damp ringlets. "Wait up!" Dee Dee ran barefoot across the lawn to the street. I pulled over to the curb, bracing one foot against it, and said, "You're up early." She grinned. She was wearing a faded, ripped, oversized t-shirt with a purple dinosaur on it that she'd slept in, I guessed. Her hair was still tousled, and her face was scrubbed clean, making her look like a mischievous 12-year-old. "I'm always up early. How was your date last night? Was he cute? I want to hear all about him." "The communication on this street is unbelievable," I answered. She giggled. "I was curious. I wanted to find out about this guy Eric told you about. I've never heard Eric even mention him, so I called Eric, and he just happened to tell me he fixed the two of you up with a date." "So? What was Tony like? Was he cute? What did you talk about?" I stared right into Dee Dee's eyes without smiling. "We talked about the murder," I said. Dee Dee gasped, and tears filled her eyes. "Oh, damn," she said. "You're never going to want to speak to me again, are you?" I got off my bike and laid it against the curb. I'd like us to be friends, but right now I'm awfully mad at your mother. I guess I don't blame you, Dee Dee said. But her job is selling houses. What was she going to do? She should have been honest and told my father about the murder. Then he wouldn't have bought the house. No one would. She glanced over her shoulder at our house and shivered. It would have just sat there and crumbled. After the Holtz moved out, somebody threw rocks into the front windows, and one night someone kicked in the back door. Nobody on the street wanted the house empty. Look at it our way. Don't you understand? No, I said. Dee Dee turned slowly and began to walk back to her house, so I added, But I do want to be friends. She lifted her head and smiled hopefully. It would be awful living next door to you if you hated me. I managed to smile back. I doubt if anyone could hate you. Eric does, sometimes, she answered. Of course, Eric hates almost everybody. He can be so mean when he feels like it. She wiggled her shoulders as though she were tossing off the problem between us. About Tony, she said. I know he's tall, but what does he look like? Nothing special, just okay, I answered, but I felt myself blush. Dee Dee grinned, but before she could say a word, I went on. He's tall, just as Eric said, and he has a good tan, and his hair and mustache are dark brown. Mustache? Her eyebrows rose. How old is he? He said he was a year older than Eric. That would make him 19. And you like him, Dee Dee said. It wasn't a question. Yes, I guess I do. I could feel my cheeks grow even warmer. Have you eaten breakfast? Dee Dee asked. I haven't. Come on in. I'll get Lupita to fix us something, and you can tell me all about Tony. I didn't want to tell Dee Dee about Tony. I wanted to keep him to myself. I pointedly glanced at my watch, not really seeing it, and said, I've got to get home. I told Mom I'd take a quick ride, then get back and help with the unpacking. I'll see you later. I could come over and help, too, if you'd like me to. She glanced at our house again from the corner of her eye. Sooner or later, I'll have to get used to being in the house. Just like we'll have to get used to living in it. Dee Dee flinched. I hadn't meant to hurt her. I'm sorry, I told her. All of this wasn't your fault. Dee Dee blinked a couple of times, managed to smile, and said, I'll be over in about an hour, okay? Great, I answered. We'll put you to work. When I finished my bike ride, I wheeled the bike into the garage and went back inside the house, where Mom was on her hands and knees, her head inside one of the kitchen cupboards. Are you sure I can't do that for you? I asked. She squirmed backward until she could sit upright. No thanks, she said. I know exactly where I want to put everything in my kitchen. She pointed toward the end of the counter. I've made a shopping list. Why don't you take the car and run down to the store? By the time you've bought the groceries, the bookstores will be open. Then you can stop by the vet's and get Dinky. Good. I can't wait to see Dinky. Mom tilted her head and examined me. Why this interest in Spanish all of a sudden? Lots of people in Houston speak Spanish. We'd always been open and honest with each other, so I felt uncomfortable about hiding my reason from her. Mom sighed and said, I know this move has been tough on you, Sarah, but when school starts, you'll make some friends. I have one friend here already, Dee Dee Pritchard. Mom's eyes clouded for an instant. Before she could say anything, I quickly added, Dee Dee's nice, really. Don't blame her for what her mother did. I know you're right, Mom said, although she didn't look very happy about it. I'm still having trouble accepting what happened. Everything's going to be okay, Mom. I picked up the shopping list and hurried from the room. She'd always been good at reading my face. While I was standing in line at the bookstore, waiting to buy a Spanish-English phrasebook, I looked up the section on familiar phrases. Lo necesito esta noche. I need it tonight. Aquí tiene la lista. Here is the list. Trate de encontrarlo. try to find it. Try to find it. With trembling fingers, I fumbled through my shoulder bag, pulled out the scrap of paper on which I'd written the words from my dream, and read them. Trate de encontrarlo. The same words. Try to find it. Try to find what? May I help you? The clerk asked. Quickly, I paid for the book and hurried out to the car. I thumbed through the book, trying to find what I wanted to ask, but the verb to find, encontrar, was not conjugated. Here was que, meaning what. Could I combine them? Or just answer que to whoever was trying to reach me? When I picked up Dinky, I was so glad to have her in my arms again that I snuggled against her fur. She looked at me as though she blamed me for her visit at the vet's. It's not my fault, I told her, and tucked her inside the cat carrier. Moving's been hard on all of us. Why should you be an exception? Dinky just sneered and turned her back to me. Dee Dee arrived at my house just as I pulled into the driveway. I'm ready to work, she said, and tugged one of the large grocery bags from the car. Spying the cat carrier, she said, Hey, she's pretty. Dinky looked at Dee Dee with a little more friendliness than she'd shown me, but once inside the house, Dinky went exploring, ignoring both of us. I watched her carefully to see how she reacted. Weren't cats supposed to sense things people couldn't see? But not a hair raised on Dinky's calico back. Mom and Dee Dee greeted each other a little awkwardly. I'll put away the groceries, Mom said. She nodded toward the maid's room. I'd appreciate it if you girls would do a really good job of wiping down the floor in there, especially in the little closet. It's a hands-and-knees job, and my back is beginning to give out. Dee Dee and I equipped ourselves with soft old towels and the wood cleanser. I'll begin in the closet, I said. The closet was so small that I couldn't get completely into it. I attacked the baseboards, scrubbing hard. I was so intent on my work that at first I didn't notice that the air had changed. It grew warmer, and it touched my face in rhythm, as though someone were breathing. I heard the words in my head. Trate de encontrarlo. K, I demanded. K, K, K. There was no answer, but the breathing became more rapid. How can I help you if you don't tell me what you want? I asked. Stubbornly, I scrubbed even harder at the baseboard, working faster, trying to break the rhythm that surged against me. It was like an excited heartbeat, a gasping, a trembling, and it wouldn't leave me alone. Suddenly, a piece of the baseboard came away in my hands. Oh, no, I said. I think I broke something. But I realized that I hadn't broken it. The board must have been loose. It pulled away too quickly. The breathing stopped. What did you break? Dee Dee was right beside me, peering over my shoulder. I picked up the small piece of board, about 8 or 10 inches in length, to see if there were nails I might drive in a little deeper in order to fasten it in place, and I glimpsed a shallow, hollowed-out place, a rough gap in the sheetrock. Inside this hollow was a bundle of papers with a thin silver chain wound around them. Move back, Dee Dee, I'm coming out. I squirmed backward into the room. She plopped down beside me as I sat cross-legged on the floor, examining the small packet in my hands. What is it? Where did you find it? She asked. It was tucked behind a loose piece of baseboard. That's a religious medal, she said, as I unwound the chain and exposed a round silver medal so small that I hadn't noticed it at first. The envelope on top was unsealed. Inside was a wad of currency, both United States money and Mexican pesos. Oh, Dee Dee said. How much money is in there? I thumbed through it. About $150 in U.S. bills. I don't know how much the pesos would be worth. Is there a name somewhere in there? I dropped the first envelope and medal into my lap and opened the second. Inside was a small pocket calendar, 2 years out of date. The names of the months and days of the week were in Spanish, each day crossed off with a tiny black X up through March 2nd. From March 3rd, there were no markings on the calendar. Dee Dee gasped. March 3rd is the day the murder took place. What do you think that means?
I don't know. Whoever owned these things must have left this house the day before.
Or on the day of the murder.
You mean that the person might have seen what happened?
I shivered, thinking of how terrifying that would be.
What else have you got there? Dee Dee asked.
With the calendar was a small envelope addressed to Rosa Luis at a post office address someplace in Mexico called El Chapul, and there was a canceled Mexican stamp on the envelope.
Rosa? Is that your name?
I felt a shiver of recognition. I turned the envelope over and stared at it.
This is a personal letter, I said. I don't think we should read it.
Sure we should, Dee Dee demanded. She was practically leaning into my lap. It's been opened, hasn't it? Besides, we need to know who owns these things, don't we?
She paused and added, and if they have anything to do with the murder.
From the envelope, I took out a small, rough sheet of paper. It was dated about 4 years ago and was addressed to Rosa Luis with a formal heading.
Can you read Spanish? Dee Dee asked me.
No.
Then stop staring at the letter and give it to me. I'll read it.
Almost reluctantly, I handed the sheet of paper to her, and she studied it.
Oh, dear, she said.
I reached over and shook her shoulder. Read it aloud. I want to know what it says, too.
Dee Dee complied, translating as she went along, with only a few stumbles.
This is to inform you that your uncle, Carlos Reyna, died last week of complications brought on by influenza. He worked on my farm for many years, as you may know. The other workers told me that you were his only living relation, so I am writing to inform you that he is buried in the church cemetery at Hermosillo. Señor Reyna had only a few possessions. I will hold them for you if you wish, but I am enclosing in this letter the medal he always wore. With sincere condolences, Señor Diego de la Ruiz, Rancho Playa del Rey, Sonora.
Sorrow wrapped itself around me, its weight bending my shoulders.
Poor Rosa, I murmured. She was all alone.
Dee Dee's glance was curious.
How do you know that?
I was puzzled, too.
I don't really know.
I took a deep breath and tried to cover by saying, I just took it for granted that if she were her uncle's only relative, then he must have been her only relative.
Wrong, Dee Dee said. She might have been married. She might have a dozen children. Parents, brothers, sisters-in-law, who knows? She paused. The real question is, who is this Rosa Luis and what are her things doing in this closet?
She probably worked here, I answered.
Dee Dee fingered the bills.
Poor thing. She worked hard for this money. She wouldn't have wanted to leave it behind. Maybe we could find her and get it back to her.
We can't do that.
Why not? You sound so positive.
The presence who had contacted me was Rosa. I was sure of this. But I couldn't tell Dee Dee about it. How could I explain?
I know what we can do, Dee Dee said. We can telephone Mr. Holt. Maybe he'll know where Rosa is.
No, I insisted. But Dee Dee handed me the letter, jumped to her feet, and ran into the kitchen. I hurried after her.
Dee Dee, wait a minute. I don't think telephoning Mr. Holt is a good idea.
But Dee Dee had already bent over the Houston telephone directory and was thumbing through the pages.
I know where Mr. Holt works, she said.
Yes, here's the number. I'll dial, you talk.
We shouldn't, I began, but Dee Dee had already finished dialing.
Here, she said in a stage whisper, thrusting the receiver at me. It's ringing.
Hello?
A masculine voice was saying as I reluctantly took the receiver from Dee Dee.
Hello?
I tried to sound very businesslike, but I felt strange talking to a man whose son was a murderer.
My name is Sarah Darnell. Is this Mr. Martin Holt?
Yes, it is.
I plunged right in. Mr. Holt, we're living in your former house on Fair Oaks Lane. We've found something that belongs to a Rosa Louise, and I hope you can tell me how we can get in touch with her. For a moment, there was silence. Mr. Holt? I asked. Are you still there?
Yes, he said,
his voice so thick with suspicion that it dropped a notch.
What do you want? I don't understand the reason for this call.
I'm sorry, I said. Maybe I didn't explain it right. I was cleaning up, and I found a few possessions belonging to a Rosa Louise.
What possessions?
I don't know why, but something kept me from telling him everything. A small amount of money and a religious medal. Her name was with them.
Oh, he said, the tension leaving his voice. Well, somehow they must have gotten talked out of sight and she forgot about them. Obviously they didn't mean much to her.
You know her then?
Yes, he said.
Did she work for you?
A long time ago. It must have been 10 years, at least. I remember it was when we first moved into that house. We only employed her for a few months. She didn't work out.
I took a deep breath and tried to sound calm. Do you know where she went?
Nope, he said. Probably back to Mexico.
I'd like to return these things to her.
Forget it, he snapped. She was one of the many illegal. She's probably somewhere back in Mexico, and you'd never find her. Keep the money. Count it as an unexpected gift.
That's all you can tell me about her?
That's more than enough. I scarcely remember her.
He broke off, his tone almost angry.
I have a business appointment. There's really nothing more we need to discuss, is there?
No, I said. Thank you very much. As I hung up the receiver, Dee Dee leaned across the counter, asking eagerly,
Well, what did he say? Tell me!
I tightly gripped the envelope that held Rosa Louise's few possessions. He said he barely remembered her, that she worked here for just a few months when they first moved into this house. Dee Dee looked disappointed.
So that's that.
Let's keep this to ourselves, I told her. At least for now, I'd just as soon no one else knew about it. Dee Dee tried to look innocent.
Sure, if you want. I can keep a secret, no matter what Eric says about me. But I don't understand why...
No real reason. Just humor me, okay? But I did have a reason. The dates Mr. Holt gave me were years before the dates on the letter and on the calendar. Martin Holt had lied to me, and I wanted to know why. Chapter 7. When Dee Dee left for lifeguard duty, I was glad. I needed time to think. Mom handed me a folded newspaper. Do me a favor and take this out to the garage, she said. As I glanced at the newspaper, the front page headlines gave me an idea. Do you think that the Houston Post or the Houston Chronicle would let me look up back copies of their newspapers? I asked Mom.
You can find back issues of local papers on film in any city's downtown library.
She straightened, a hand at the small of her back, and leaned against the kitchen counter, studying me.
You want to read about the murder, don't you?
Yes. Her forehead puckered. I don't think that's a good idea. Everyone else knows all the details. I think it will be easier to know what happened here than to guess at it. I had to learn as much as possible about what really happened. Mom hesitated.
Maybe we should ask your father for his opinion.
I walked over to face Mom, resting my hands on her shoulders. Mom, you've got to stop worrying about me. I need to be independent. I have to make my own decisions. Mom took a deep breath, closing her eyes. She opened them, looked right into my eyes, and said, All right, Sarah. I trust your judgment. If you want to go to the library, you can take the car. I won't need it until late this afternoon. Thanks, Mom.
I gave her a hug, then paused. "Do you happen to know how to get to the downtown library?" She laughed.
"Call them up, O independent one. Ask them for directions."
"Let's try this one first," the librarian said as she snapped the first roll into place in one of the microfilm readers and showed me how to fast forward and reverse.
"As far as I remember, the issues that first tell about the murder are included in here. The stories about the trial are in the roll on the bottom of the stack I brought you."
She studied me.
"We haven't had anyone ask for these dates in a long time."
I just nodded. As she walked away, I began to forward the tape from page to page, rapidly scanning the front pages. The fast forward made me sick to my stomach, and every now and then I had to pause, closing my eyes to give them a rest. I found the story close to the middle of the film. It was under a top-of-the-page banner headline. "Delivery girl brutally murdered, teenager caught, confesses." The picture of Adam Holt was not very clear, and one arm was across his face, so a school photo from the year before was run next to it. Adam was blonde and pudgy and looking away from the camera, unsmiling, so it was hard to tell about his eyes. Basically, there was not much more information in the news stories than Dad had told us. The murder victim, Darlene Garland, apparently came to the Holt's door with a pizza delivery. Adam Holt met her there with a knife. He attempted to drag her up the stairs. She bolted and tried to run, and he stabbed her. The follow-up stories covered the same information. Adam told his story to two police officers while being driven to headquarters, but refused to give a written or taped confession after his parents hired an attorney. I rewound the film, according to instructions, and put on the last roll, the one with the accounts of the trial. This one had some information that hadn't come out in the earlier stories. A woman who lived across the street from the Holts testified that she had been gardening in her backyard when she heard screams coming from what she thought was the Holt house. According to her testimony, she ran inside her own house and locked the door.
"Did you call the police?" the prosecuting attorney asked her.
"Oh, no," she answered. "At first I was afraid, but then I thought how I've never heard anything like that around here, and it had to have been, well, I thought it was kids just chasing around and acting silly. If that's all it was and I called the police, I'd look like a fool." I stopped reading. If only she'd called the police. They could have placed Adam at the scene of the crime. I rubbed my eyes, which were beginning to ache, and went back to reading the newspaper stories. The woman told the court that she thought she had remembered glancing at her kitchen clock, and she was pretty sure that it read 1:15. The defense attorney discredited her testimony, which must not have been hard to do, because the delivery girl couldn't have arrived on the scene much before 1:30. The medical examiner testified there were two kinds of blood found in the Holt's hallway, type A and type O. Darlene Garland had type O blood, and Adam had type A. The discussion about the oral confession took up half a newspaper page. The judge allowed it, even though the defense attorney reminded him that under Texas law, an oral confession was not admissible. In a later issue, I read that the jury had found Adam Holt guilty of murder in the first degree and that he was sentenced to life imprisonment. But his attorney filed an appeal based on the wrongful admission of the oral confession. I rewound the tape, knowing the rest of it. A higher court threw out the verdict, and Adam was released to live with one or both of his parents. There was plenty of evidence to place Adam at the scene of the murder, but an eyewitness was lacking, so he got away with his crime. How did this all fit in with Rosa? I had the uncomfortable feeling that something I had read held a clue to the answer, but it eluded me, and I couldn't capture it. A voice spoke next to me, startling me so that I jumped.
"Did you find what you were looking for?"
I stared up at the librarian who had brought me the film. "I don't know," I answered. "I thought there would be something about..." A wisp of a thought tickled my mind, then disappeared before I could grasp it. What was it?
Do me a favor, peel some carrots, Mom called as she trotted past me on her way to the garage. I forgot about lettuce and tomatoes for a salad, so I'm going to make a quick trip to the store.
I peeled the carrots, then wandered from the kitchen into the den, Dinky at my heels. The house was quiet, the sun slanting long, shimmering ribbons of light through the west windows. I walked to the edge of the entry hall, which was peaceful in the late afternoon stillness and shadow. I found myself waiting, melting into the silence as though it were expected of me. Why? Slowly, like cold, creeping fingers against my skin, came the awareness that some unseen being was with me. Terrified, I whispered, Rosa, is it you?
Esto para usted.
From classroom Spanish, I remembered the words, this is for you, but I didn't know what Rosa meant. Slowly, I sank to the tiles and sat cross-legged. What is for me, Rosa? What do you want of me? I asked. My whisper was so loud that I shrank from the sound, trembling. Dinky crooned in the back of her throat, and her hair stood on end. With a shriek, she bolted from the room. In spite of my fear, I squeezed my eyes tightly shut, took a deep breath, and tried to concentrate. Rosa, I begged, don't force me. I told you that I'd help you willingly. There was no response, so I added, I'm trying to reach you, but I don't know what step to take next. You'll have to tell me. You wanted me here. I'm here. I'm listening. I'm waiting.
Silencio, por favor.
Her words were soft and tearful, almost like an apology, and somehow I understood that Rosa had something she wanted to show me. Slowly, I began to feel the room changing around me. The air shifted, turned warmly damp and sour with fear, and Rosa's sobs became little drops of ice that slithered down my backbone. I was afraid to open my eyes, terrified of what I might see. Suddenly, with the swiftness and shock of a slap, the sensation vanished. Rosa? I thought in surprise. What happened? Are you here with me? Do you want to talk to me? I could feel her breath against my face. But it was agitated. Her plan had been interrupted. I slumped with relief, as though I'd been held tightly by a string and suddenly let go. Even though she hadn't told me, I suspected that Rosa had been about to unleash the horror that clung to this room. Rosa, I'm afraid. I'm scared to death, I told her. I promised to help you, and I will, but please don't pull me into something I can't handle. I waited for an answer, but it didn't come. Instead, I realized that I was being watched by someone close by. Someone I knew was not Rosa. I couldn't stand the tension. My eyelids flew open and my head jerked toward the window next to the front door. I screamed as my eyes met those in the face that was staring in at me. The figure waved and gestured. Through a haze, I saw that it was only Dee Dee. Stumbling, shaking, I managed to get to my feet and cross the hall to open the front door.
I didn't mean to scare you, Dee Dee said.
She shifted the large potted plant in her arms and put it on the hall table.
You look awful. You're so pale. I'm sorry.
She clutched my shoulders and led me to the stairs, pushing me down.
Do you need to put your head between your knees?
I'm all right. I'm not going to faint. I took a couple of long, deep breaths and felt the color flood back into my cheeks.
What in the world were you doing on the floor with your eyes shut?
Dee Dee asked.
Yoga? Oh, I know. You were meditating.
Strange Sarah. Not again. Oh, please, not again. Embarrassed, I snapped. It doesn't matter, does it? I didn't think I was on exhibit.
Hey, look, Dee Dee explained. Don't blame me for seeing you. Anybody who comes to the door can see inside your house. It would be hard not to. She smiled. And don't be embarrassed because I caught you meditating. Lots of people do it. I got into a weight loss program last year that called for meditating, and I tried it, but I couldn't keep my mind on it because I kept thinking about other things. She giggled. If I were you, though, I'd do the meditating in your bedroom, where you'd have some privacy, and not in the entry hall. She sat on the stair beside me. Would you like to split a Coke? I asked, desperate to change the subject. No, thanks, Dee Dee said. It's almost dinner time. I just came over to deliver the plant from my mom to yours and to tell you something about those papers and things you found. I asked Lupita if she knew anybody over here named Rosa Louise, and she... Dee Dee, I interrupted. I asked you not to tell anyone about those things. She looked slightly guilty. I didn't, really. I just asked her if she knew Rosa Louise. I'm not going to talk about it to anyone else, honest. Okay, so what did Lupita tell you? That's the strange part, Dee Dee said. She acted real scared and kept rattling on in Spanish so fast I couldn't understand her. I did understand a couple of words, though. Immigration and deported. Rosa? That must be what she meant. If Rosa had been deported, surely the officials would have let her take her belongings with her. She must have taken her clothes, Dee Dee said. Maybe she forgot about the packet you found until after she was on a bus headed back to Mexico, and it was too late. Her money and the silver medal her uncle left her, do you really think she'd forget those? I don't know. Dee Dee leaned over and scratched at a tiny red spot on her ankle. We're not going to find out anything from Lupita. That's what I wanted to tell you. You're wrong. We did find out something. Dee Dee stopped scratching and straightened, looking at me with surprise. What are you talking about? It's simple, I said. We found out that Lupita knew Rosa. Chapter 8. By the time dinner was over, I was exhausted. I watched TV in the den and woke up during the 10 o'clock news to find I'd been sleeping all evening. It's a good sign, I heard Dad saying. Sarah's beginning to relax. We all need to. The murder is over and done with, and we can't let it affect our lives. It affects the way I feel about the people on this block, Mom said. I can't help it. She glared at Evelyn Pritchard's potted plant, which I'd moved to the coffee table. I know. There was a pause, and Dad said, We could take Sarah's example, too. She's already made friends in the neighborhood. I stretched, yawned loudly, and sat up, pretending to have just awakened, so they wouldn't know that I'd overheard what they'd said. It looks like I woke up just in time to go to bed, I told them. I'm afraid that after your long nap, you won't be able to get to sleep, Mom said. Would you like me to make you some hot cocoa? I'll be glad to stay up and chat with you. Thanks, but I don't need hot cocoa or conversation either. I feel as though I could sleep for a couple of weeks. Maybe you need vitamins, Mom began. But Dad and I shouted at her at the same time. Dorothy! Mom! She laughed. Okay. I'll back off. I kissed Mom and Dad goodnight and climbed the stairs to my room. Once inside with the door shut, I opened the bottom drawer in my chest of drawers and took out the packet of things that belonged to Rosa. Separating them, I laid them out on top of the chest to examine them. The silver medal seemed to tug in my hand, so I opened my palm, exposing the medal to view. Rosa? I asked, but there was no answer. The silver grew warm, probably from the heat of my body. I placed the medal beside the little calendar and reread the letter. What had Rosa planned to show me this afternoon? I shuddered,
pushing the question out of my mind. I didn't want to think about it. I was afraid that I knew. I began to yawn again. My eyelids were heavy. I wrapped up the little bundle and tucked it back into the drawer. I showered, put on my pajamas, and literally fell into bed. I dreamed about a young woman, not much older than I. She sat near the foot of my bed, huddled inside a large woven shawl. Her skin was a deep brown, her black hair pulled back tightly, and her dark eyes never left my face. The sorrow that drew her features into a tight mask was so intense that in sympathy I reached out to her. She straightened and extended her hands to me. But as she sat upright, the shawl fell back, and I saw that her body was soaked with blood. The dark blood dripped from her fingers onto mine, and I was helpless to pull away. "No," I tried to cry out. "Ayúdame," she pleaded. Terrified, I tried to shout at her to go away, to run from those eyes that stared into mine. But I couldn't move or speak. Finally, desperately, a guttural animal sound escaped through my lips, waking me. I was tangled in the sheet, my body drenched with sweat. Struggling, kicking away the sheet, I managed to sit up and turn on the bed lamp to chase away the last remnants of the nightmare. There were no other sounds in the house, so it was obvious I didn't make enough noise to wake Mom and Dad. I slumped against the headboard, unable to get the picture of the woman out of my mind. Rosa. It had to be. I'd promised to help her and had opened my mind to her. I'd allowed her to come. "Not in my dreams," I murmured aloud. "There has to be some place where I can escape. Rosa, I don't want you to frighten me like this. Do you understand?" There was a special silence, like a door closing softly, and I knew she had left. I didn't understand the dream. Why had Rosa been covered with blood? What did she have to do with Darlene Garland's murder? What had really happened in this house? I squirmed back down under the sheet, punched at my pillow, and rolled on my side. I ached for sleep, but I was afraid to let go, afraid that Rosa might return. The next day, after breakfast, Mom decided to hang pictures, and I helped her, the measuring and hammering and pounding mercifully driving all thoughts of the dream out of my head. Around 11, she asked, "Where's Dee Dee? I thought she'd be over to see you." She said something about having to go shopping all day with her mother. This is Dee Dee's day off from her lifeguard job. "Speaking of shopping," Mom said, "I've been making a list. Hardware, plumbing supplies, that sort of thing. It's going to take me all afternoon to find everything on my list. Want to come? Or would you rather stay home?" I smiled at her. "Going to a plumbing supply store is not my idea of real excitement. I could stay here and work and be of more help. Would you like me to unpack the books and put them in the bookcases? I know how you like them arranged." "I'd love it if you take care of the books," Mom said. "I've been dreading that job." The mail came, but no letter from Marcy. Why should I have expected one? I hadn't written to her either. "I'll write today," I promised myself. "I'll tell her about Dee Dee, maybe about Tony." But I knew I wouldn't. I was distancing myself, afraid to write a letter that might not be answered. Mom left after lunch, and Dinky settled into a nap on the top box of those marked books. I moved Dinky to another perch. Upset at being moved, she narrowed her eyes and mewed a complaint, then pretended to go back to sleep. I was so busy checking titles and reading snatches here and there that I jumped when the doorbell rang. Dinky rose majestically, flipping her tail with a snap of irritation. Through the window by the door, I saw Tony and stopped, catching my breath, as his eyes met mine. I smiled, not trying to hide my delight, and hurried to open the door. "I was in the neighborhood and thought this would be a good time to meet your mother," Tony said as he stepped inside and shut the door. The air turned cold and the walls of the entry hall seemed to press inward. My head pounded and I silently screamed at Rosa, "No, not now! Go away! You can't do this to me now!" Gasping for breath, I grabbed Tony's hand and tugged him past the entry hall, through the dining room, and into the kitchen. I let go and leaned against the nearest counter, breathing heavily. Whatever I had felt in the entry hall had gone. But Tony was studying me, and it surprised me that his eyes had narrowed in the same way that Dinky narrowed hers, with light seeming to gleam from under the lashes. "What's the matter, Sarah?" he asked me.
"Nothing. I'm fine." I tried to shrug off what had happened. "I've been working hard, unpacking books. I guess I got a little out of breath."
I opened the refrigerator door, wanting desperately to talk about something else.
"How about a soft drink?"
"Sure," he said, "but I can only stay for a few minutes." He looked at his watch and glanced back through the living room. "Where's your mother?"
"Oh, Mom, she left to run errands. She won't be back for a few hours."
Tony smiled. Did I imagine that he looked relieved?
"My bad timing," he said.
"Well, as long as I'm here, I'll help you unpack the books."
"Thanks, but you said you could only stay a few minutes. You won't have time."
His smile was easy. "I'll make time." We took our soft drinks into the den, and Tony worked beside me, making the job go much faster. Our conversation consisted of his asking, "Where do these go?" and my telling him, "On the bottom shelf over there, or right here next to the gardening books," until he suddenly stopped, took the books I was holding out of my hands, and led me to the sofa.
"We need a break," he said. "I want a chance to talk to you."
He didn't let go of my hand, and I was glad. I didn't want him to.
"Tell me about yourself," Tony said.
"There's not much to tell. We used to live in Missouri until Dad was transferred here to Houston."
"That's not about you," he insisted, and leaned closer, staring into my eyes as though he could see what was in my mind. "I want to know about Sarah. The things that make her happy, the things she likes, even the things that frighten her." His voice was low, almost a whisper.
His question puzzled me. "Why should you want to know what frightens me?"
"Something frightens you," he said. He stroked my hand. "Look, you're trembling."
Maybe it was Tony who frightened me, or the way he made me feel. I wasn't sure.
"If it's the house," he said, "maybe I can help you."
He leaned back, breaking the spell, and I took a long, shuddering breath.
"How could you help me?"
"You're forgetting. I know Adam. I know the story about the murder."
"Did Adam tell you why he did it?"
Tony threw me a quick sideways glance.
"There wasn't much doubt. He was on medication for a couple of things, an antibiotic he was taking because of a viral infection, and a steroid he was taking to build himself up for the football team. He'd been having trouble with depression, too, and a doctor had given him something for that. Adam said he was so over-medicated he didn't know what he was doing."
"But murder?" I asked. "How could anyone not know he was killing someone?"
Tony bristled. "I'm on Adam's side," he said. "I don't want him to go to prison."
"There's not much chance of that, is there?"
I knew I sounded bitter, because Tony gave me another sharp look. He was quiet for a few minutes, then said,
"I guess it's you I'm thinking of, Sarah, and not Adam. I don't like to think of you being frightened in this house. You're a very special person, and I want you to be happy. Not afraid."
I'll be all right.
Tony moved closer and put an arm around my shoulders.
"You were frightened of something when I got here. I could see it in your face. What was it?
It was just, well, a sensation I had. It went away.
Tony's hand on my arm was warm and firm. If you want to talk about it, Sarah, I'll listen. I would have loved to have been able to tell him everything that had happened to me, but of course I couldn't. Yet maybe there was something Tony could help me with. I asked him,
"You came here to see Adam sometimes, isn't that right?"
"Yes."
"Did you ever meet any of the Holt's household help?" For just a second, his fingers tightened on my arm, but he answered easily,
"Sure. There were a couple of them over the years, maybe three."
"One named Rosa Louise?"
"Rosa Louise?"
His voice was strained.
I don't know. I'm not sure. The name isn't familiar."
"She was young and slender, with a small, narrow face and large eyes." He sat upright, turned, and peered into my face.
"How do you know what she looked like?"
Stunned, I fumbled for an answer. I found some things that belonged to her. She'd hidden them away under a loose baseboard in the closet in the maid's room off the kitchen."
"What were these things?"
"Money, both pesos and United States currency, a letter telling her that her uncle had died, which was addressed to her at a Mexican address, a silver religious medal, and a calendar."
"A calendar? What kind of a calendar?"
"Just a small calendar, 2 years old. She'd marked off the days up to March 3rd. He paused for a minute, breathing heavily. "What's the matter?" I asked him.
"Nothing's the matter," Tony said. "I'm just trying to remember, as you asked me to."
Suddenly, he added,
"You didn't mention the photograph."
"There wasn't a photograph."
"Then how do you know what she looked like?"
I took a deep breath and the words tumbled out. "I saw the woman, Rosa, in a dream." I hated myself for telling. I'd done it again. I waited for the wary, embarrassed look to come into Tony's eyes. But it didn't. Tony looked at me seriously.
"A dream," he murmured. "I seem to remember there was a young woman. I think her name could have been Rosa.
When did she live here?"
He scowled, as though he were thinking hard. "How should I know?"
"I mean, was it a long time ago? A few years ago?" Why had I asked that? Was I testing him?
Tony leaned back against the sofa cushions, and his eyes narrowed again as he studied me. "The calendar you found should tell you that, shouldn't it?"
Embarrassed, I blushed. There was no way to explain.
"Time for me to be going," Tony said abruptly, and stood. He reached down for my hand and pulled me to my feet.
"Please don't be mad at me," I said. I wasn't trying to trick you."
"Hey, it's okay," Tony said. "I told you I couldn't stay long. I'm going to be late as it is."
I looked at the clock in the VCR on top of the television set. "Mom should be home soon," I said. "I wish you could stay just a little while longer and meet her."
"Sorry."
Tony stopped me as I turned to go toward the front door and placed his hands on my shoulders.
"Sarah," he said, "I don't like to worry you, but I hope you've got Rosa's things well hidden."
"Hidden? Why?
Are they?"
"No, not exactly. They're in the chest of drawers in my room, but no one goes in there but me."
He looked so serious that it scared me.
"Why are you telling me this?"
"Because no one should know about them. You haven't told anyone besides me, have you?"
"I telephoned Mr. Holt to ask him about Rosa and told him I'd found, well, some of her things. And Dee Dee knows. She was here when I found them. She translated the letter for me."
Tony sucked in his breath and muttered something. I'm sorry, Dee Dee knows. The fewer people, the better.
Why?
Why? Oh, because Dee Dee spills everything she knows.
I asked her not to.
He shook his head. There's no way of telling what those things of Rose's mean. Probably nothing, but we ought to keep quiet about them.
I don't understand.
She would have headed back to Mexico, he said. There'd be no way to find her, and in trying, you might stir up a lot of unnecessary trouble.
For whom?
For Adam and his family, he said. Probably for Rosa, too, since she was here illegally. He took a deep breath, and his eyes were so dark and demanding that I shivered. He added in a voice so soft I had to strain to hear, "And maybe for you." My voice cracked as I tried to talk.
"Tony, are you threatening me?"
"Oh, Sarah," he said, as though I'd heard him. "Don't think that. It wasn't a threat. What I said was only a warning."
Chapter 9. Mom was disappointed that she had missed meeting Tony.
"I wish he'd called in advance," she said.
"He didn't plan on coming. He just happened to be in the neighborhood," I told her. A little wrinkle flickered between Mom's eyebrows.
"Sarah, before you go out with Tony again, your father and I want to meet him."
"Sure," I answered quickly. "That's taken for granted."
"Just make sure Tony knows the rule."
"I will. You're gonna like Tony, Mom, I promise." Smiling, I rummaged through the nearest brown paper bag and said, "Nothing interesting in here. When I was a little kid, you used to bring me a lollipop."
"Try the bag near the stove," she said with a grin. "No lollipops in it, but I think you'll settle for some red grapes. They look sweet enough to burst."
I washed the grapes, put them in a bowl, and Mom joined me, munching on a handful of grapes as she leaned against the counter.
"I stopped off at the Civic Club office," she said. "I signed up for a family membership at the swimming pool."
When I didn't answer, she added, "Whenever you're ready to go swimming again, Sarah, the pool will be there." But I wasn't ready. Not yet.
Dee Dee came over the next morning. "I saw your names on the club roster," she said to Mom and me. "Have you been swimming in the pool yet?"
"We haven't had a chance," Mom told her.
"There's no time like the present," Dee Dee said.